The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, today is the festival of the Buddha's renunciation, which we celebrate, because if it hadn't been for that, we wouldn't be here. We all know the story, how he had this lovely, palace life, comfort, his father kept him away from the world, because it had been predicted that the Buddha would become a great spiritual leader, give up his home life, and leave, and the king didn't want that. He wanted him to be the next king, he wanted him to inherit the throne. And so he kept him away from all the sights of the world, all the things that might, make him want to do something different. But Shakyamuni, or Siddhartha, I guess he was then, had a sense there was something missing. There's more to life than this. And that unease led him to keep wanting to go out. And finally his father said, okay, you can go out into the town. And the story has it that he cleaned up the town, hid away all the sick people, all the old people and so forth, made it all look nice and pretty. And so Siddhartha goes out in his chariot with his charioteer, and everything's nice and pretty. And then the story says the guardian kings who wanted him to become the Buddha disguised themselves as an old person. So first he sees this really old, decrepit, bent-over man. He's never seen anything like it. Because in the palace, anybody old was kind of whisked away, All the, apparently the flowers, as soon as they began to wither, would be nipped off and, composted or whatever it is. And so all he'd see would be young, beautiful things. And suddenly he sees this old guy. He says, what's wrong with him? And this charioteer says, he's old, my lord. This happens to everybody. And Siddhartha thinks, whoa. Okay. Then he sees a sick person. And this is in India, so I'm sure a sick person would look really sick, Once again, he says, what's wrong with him? He's never seen anything like it. Here's this person just lying prone and looking terrible. And this charioteer says, well, he's sick, my lord. Everybody gets sick. Okay. Then he sees a dead person being borne along. He says, what's that? And this charioteer says, that's a dead man, my lord. Death comes to all of us. So this really, made him think. And then he saw a renunciate, somebody who had renounced the world, and of course in India, then as now, to be a wandering ascetic or a wandering seeker of the way is a tradition. People do it all the time. Naked ascetics, matted hair ascetics, all kinds of renunciates, yogis. You see them now, and they had them then. So he sees one of these, and he thinks, ah, there is something else. And these four sights led him to let go of his home life. He must have gone home and thought about it for a while. The story has it that he left that very night. Well, I have a feeling he would have pondered this for a bit, What's this? Now, it wouldn't have worked for him to stay home in his palace, thinking about old age, sickness, and death, and being surrounded by all these beautiful things. He had to go out and find the truth for himself. He couldn't just think about it. He had to let it all go and go out and find out for himself his renunciation. Now, most of us don't do it quite so radically. Even as monks nowadays, we don't, just wander out into the universe in the middle of Cincinnati or somewhere and just seek the way. We, find a place to train and we, getting fed and housed and all this. But it's really an impressive and beautiful story of how somebody can just give it all up because they know there's more to life than this. What I have, even though I have all this stuff, is not enough. And with all of that, with all of us, something like that has brought us here. All of us have thought at some point, what I have in my life, there's something more. Whether we've had some terrible tragedy of some kind or some major life-changing event, or whether we just have that unease There must be more to life than this. It's not all it's cracked up to be. There has to be something else. And it brings us to seek for the Dharma. Renunciation sounds like a kind of a chilly word. It's not a friendly word. It doesn't, oh, I think I'll go and renounce something. You know? It's sort of like a last resort. But I think of renunciation more as relinquishment, because renunciation seems to imply you're repudiating something, you know, something bad like chocolate cake, or much worse things. It implies that there's something bad about anything nice that we hold on to, and we have to reject it. The Buddha didn't hate his life, you know, he left it because he had to. It was his last resort. And the Sarvat's training is the last resort. But it's not a repudiation. It's actually a relinquishing of our grip on something. Actually, it's a relinquishing of our grip on the things that cause us to suffer. And when you think of it that way, renunciation takes on a whole nicer aspect. Relinquishing suffering doesn't sound nearly as dreary as renouncing things nice. But actually, it's relinquishing that which causes us to suffer. And this makes a complete difference to how we look at it. We move on. We're letting go of something in order to make room for something else, something better. So it's not a negative thing, it's actually a deeply positive thing. And in fact, all through our training, right from the very start, we're practicing renunciation or relinquishment, right from the get-go. The Dharma is a medicine for all suffering, and the relinquishment is a relinquishment of that which causes suffering, unease, dissatisfaction, downright misery, you know, or a whole range of things. And I'm going to talk about one, you know, a few of these things. There's a whole spectrum. We can find all kinds of ways of creating suffering for ourselves. It's very, very inventive. But I'm just going to mention one or two of them. Clinging, the first thing. Wanting. The most obvious form of the suffering caused by clinging is just simple addiction, you know, addiction to drugs or alcohol. Clearly, we try to relieve the suffering by taking these things, and of course that just makes it worse. And the only way to relinquish that particular kind of suffering is to stop, is to see it, to accept that we have this as a problem, and to let it go. And that's such a clear example that is helpful, and yet we do this with all kinds of things. And as I said, it doesn't mean that everything we like is a suffering. It's how we treat it, it's what we do with it. If we can't live without it, if we can't live without entertainment or intellectual stimulation or movies or all kinds of things, sex, you know, if we absolutely have to have these things, then we have a suffering because we're constantly worried that I have to have this, I can't live without it, and without it, we're unhappy. And there's all kinds of other things like that, which are more subtle. You've got the obvious ones, then you have the more subtle ones, the other kinds of clinging and grasping. Clinging to people. And we all know what it's like to really, you know, feel we can't live without such and such a person. I'm never happy except when I'm with them, you know. And it's a suffering, actually. We're more miserable than happy because we think we're happy, but actually we're constantly worried about losing that person, or there's jealousy, you know, dreadful, painful. That's the other side of it. It's not just happiness, you know, to really, really have that clinging love for another being. There's a whole suffering side to it. And it doesn't mean we have to give up our relationships, but to see where that clinging is, that grasping, that needing, and just to recognize it, and to just try to relax that grip, even just to see it, and to see how we suffer from that, actually helps us to give a little distance and think, ah, look what I'm doing. Do I have to do this? You know, yes, the relationship is fine, but I don't have to suffocate it with this neediness. I can actually let the person be himself, take a day off from me, and just not be quite so grabby. Our habitual ways of responding to things, that's a kind of clinging also. It's not the same sort of wanting something in the same way, but if we're habitually angry or resentful about things, irritable, to look at our mind and see how often we might respond with irritation or with anxiety. Everything that happens we worry about, you know, or despair. You know, things are hopeless, I can't do anything. Or cynicism, you know, all kinds of different things. To see how they arise in the mind, to see how we have this habitual pattern of thought, habitual irritation or habitual anxiety or whatever it might be, to see that arise in the mind and to say, to recognize it, say, ah, I'm doing it again. I don't have to do this. And when we realize we don't have to do this, it's liberating because we can do something different. We see the thing arise in the mind over and over again. Here I am again, irritated by this person, or getting upset with my family member, or just, you know, falling into despair in this situation, feeling helpless, or whatever it might be, whatever it is that causes us the suffering in our mind, to see it and to say, I don't have to do this. I can do something different. And the first step in that is to recognize it, to see it and accept it. That's another important thing. Recognize it. Ah, I get really crabby and I do it a lot, or whatever it might be. Maybe I can do something different. And we can. We can see it, and then we can start to relinquish. And this is a really important step, just recognizing it and accepting it. The conditions of our lives can cause us suffering, or we can use them. We may have very difficult situations, difficult family situations, old age, sickness, you know, somebody dies, all kinds of things. We can't prevent these, and yet we can work with them and cease to make them a suffering for ourselves by relinquishing our wanting something different. I have to have it another way. I just can't stand this anymore, you know. But to say, well, this is what I have. You know, chronic pain. I've got it. I do my best with it. And yet, here it is. What am I going to do? Am I going to be endlessly trying to get away from it, distracting myself, or angry about it? Or can I keep working on acceptance as it arises? Allow myself to feel it. Allow myself to sit still in the midst of it and accept it. It makes a huge difference how we view the conditions of our lives. Those things that we can change and those things that we can't. We can change us. We can change our attitude. And relinquishing the habitual response of suffering, of it isn't fair, you know, bitterness and resentment maybe with a difficult situation, just to accept everybody has suffering. What am I going to do about it? I can do something. Not to feed it, you know, not to feed our anger or despair or whatever it might be, to see it arise and to sit still in the midst of it. The relinquishment of clinging to anger, to bitterness, to our story. You know, I have this awful situation. I am the person who had such and such happen. You know, I'm the one who had that dreadful thing happen. Identifying with our sorrow, our grief, our history, to see ourselves do that and to say, do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to keep living in this little story? Or can I move on and just learn from it and do something different with my mind? doesn't mean it just goes away, but it gradually enlightens. You don't have to be trapped in it. It's a relinquishment, and it's a merciful relinquishment. It's not a negative thing. It's a positive thing to relinquish the grip on the broken glass, as it were. Clinging to past hurts, clinging to what's happened to us, you know. Clinging to what we look like in the eyes of other people. You know, I'm a nice person. I'm a good person. I'm an intelligent person. I'm a successful person. I'm a whatever it is. It's all the same. Fearful of not living up to this ideal of what we'd like to be or we think we are. You know, I'm a good person, but not all the time, you know. I'm a virtuous person, or I'm a nice person, but sometimes I get really crabby. And worrying about, you know, how we look like. Just to accept ourselves as we are, with all our crabbinesses, failings, weaknesses, foolishnesses, not looking good, you know, tripping over and looking completely silly. To accept all that and not to cling tightly to what we think we are or we should be or we'd like to be or we want to be, because that's a huge burden to carry, an ideal of what we'd like to be or what we think we should be or that we think we are, which is worse. But to see that, to see ourselves do that and to relinquish that grip, it's a huge relief. Self-judgment. I am unworthy. I can't do it. My life has always been like this. I'm a failure and it's always going to be that way. I'm never going to be happy. I'm this kind of a person. I'm just a miserable, despairing, angry person. There's nothing I can do. You know, this is a horrible burden. And to see myself do that and to say, I can do something different. This is the wonderful medicine of the Dharma that frees us from this. There's all kinds of forms of this, and we all have our own particular variety. And what we can do is say, what do I do? What is my particular brand of this? And just look at what the mind does, you know? Do I habitually fall into self-recrimination, guilt, despair? Do I get angry? What is it? You know, what are the many, many things that I do that create suffering for myself? And how may I relinquish that particular suffering? It's so kind and so merciful. It's not something impossible that we're trying to attain, but just helping ourselves as human beings with all our failings and using those very things to help us to learn how to be happier, kinder, wiser. It's not just a self-help thing to make us happier and nicer. It has that effect. But of course the Dharma is for liberation, freedom from suffering, freedom from the illusion of the self, which is what it all comes down to. Me. It's all about me, you know. My wants, what I have, what I need, I have to have this, or hey, I can't be happy. Or I am like this kind of a person. Grabbing things for ourselves, seeing how that creates suffering in very obvious ways and in subtle ways. If I'm trying to grab something for myself, I'm probably doing it at the expense of somebody else. I grab the thing and then I see somebody else doesn't have it and I feel bad. I can't enjoy it because I feel bad. I've grabbed something. Or we're trying to protect ourselves at the expense of other people, trying to get ahead and push somebody else out of the way. It's all suffering. Justifying ourselves, you know, I have to do it this way. Justifying our opinions, our views, our endless views. Well, of course my views are correct. They're politically correct. Nothing wrong with them. I'm going to keep them. Their views, it's just an opinion. Somebody else has a completely different opinion. There's nothing wrong with that. To see how we attribute all these things to being me. Here I am, I'm this kind of person. I have these views. I have built this kind of life. I like these kinds of things. I like these kinds of people, this kind of music, this kind of this, that, and the other thing. And this is what I am, and this is what I have, and here I am, but all this stuff. And it's a huge burden, actually. And when we see ourselves do all this, we can begin to relinquish the grip on some of this stuff. It's like having a whole house full of stuff, and you trip over it every which way, and you think, I can clear some of this stuff out. A little space in my house would be nice. Just room to think a new thought, you know, find out I'm wrong about something. To find out we've been completely wrong about something is actually liberating. First it's painful, then it's liberating. We think, oh, I was wrong about that. I've been under a misapprehension all this time about such and such. Well, look at that. I can learn something, you know. Wonderful. And all this stuff about being a self gets more and more subtle. These are the obvious things. More and more subtle little things of self. The idea of being a self is the basic delusion in Buddhism. It's the foundation of all our suffering and of everything else that we think about ourselves. My views, my way of looking at the world, my relationships, my wants, my desires, what I like, what I don't like, all that. It's the basis of the whole thing. And it separates us. It makes us feel that we're separate from everything else. Here I am, this little me, separate from everybody else, defending myself, surviving, you know. And there's a youth to that. There is a benefit to having an idea of being me, because it helps us to survive. And yet it has problems. And, of course, it helps us to train, because if I didn't have a sense of what I need to do, what I need to work on, we wouldn't get going. You know, I need to have some idea that this brain is the one I'm working on, and or whatever it might be, this Buddha nature, but it's all part of the other Buddha nature, and how does that work, and am I a separate me, or am I part of everything else, and, you know, how does it all work? The boundaries are much more blurred than we think. We think we're separate, we're not. We are all part of one thing. And we can live that way, even if we don't know it. Something in us knows that we're all connected. And yet, intellectually, we may say it's a nice idea, but I don't know it for myself. But in the meantime, we can live as though it were true, because it is true. And by living that way, we can make it true for ourselves. We are part of everything. We aren't a separate little me that has to be the center of the universe and more important than anything else and be perfect and do everything right and be respected and admired and all this stuff. We can put it down. We can just live our life, do our best, practice kindness, relinquish that grip on the things that create suffering for us, however, whatever they may be. And it's a huge relief. I don't have to be this perfect center of the universe. I can just live my life and help beings and know that I'm part of them, they're part of me, we're all part of the same thing. I'm not unusually clever or unusually deluded or unusually beastly or unusually wise or unusually nice. I'm just a normal person with stuff like everybody else. I can just relax and get on with what I need to do. Huge relief. Thoughts arising during meditation. This is where we start with the relinquishment of all this stuff. When we sit, we are taught, let thoughts come and go. Don't cling onto them. Don't push them away. Really simple, really profound, really hard to do. To just sit there and let thoughts come and go. Yes, you get caught by them. You get distracted. You're daydreaming or whatever. You suddenly notice, oh, just come back. That's all. That's all we have to do. We don't have to finish our thought. Oh, just finish this thought. Then I'll come back. It's disastrous. Disastrous. Never works. And you think, oh, I'll do it this time. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. No. Completely distracted. To actually just relinquish our grip and to trust that we don't have to finish that thought. We can actually just let it go. The world doesn't end. There's a good chance that we'll remember later what we need to remember. Doesn't have to be right now. I don't have to make a mental list in case I forget it and hold on to it and keep coming back to it. I can simply let it go and just sit here and let it all come and go. And this very, very simple practice is profound, it's fundamental, and hard. And by doing this really simple, really direct practice, that undercuts all this other stuff, this feeling of the importance of our thoughts, the importance of our feelings. I have to have what I like. I can't possibly live with what I don't like. I have to have this. I'm suffering terribly from this feeling. It's just feeling. It's just thought. And to let it all come and go and sit right in the middle of it, to recognize it, I'm getting really angry here, or, boy, I really want such and such. Let's just let that go for now and just keep coming back. When we're meditating and when we're living our life, the simple practice of actually letting things come and go is wonderful. It is liberating. It is not repudiating, rejecting anything. It's letting everything come through, to come in and go out, to come through. It's so simple and so profound. And we do it when we begin in the Dharma. We do it when we're dying. And we do it whenever we can in between. Because it's so important, it's so helpful to just see, what am I doing? What's my mind doing? And we find ourselves up a tree of some kind. What am I doing up here? Do I need to do this? No. I don't have to have my way in this matter. I don't have to exhale my opinions to the whole world. I don't have to justify this view. I don't have to have this thing that I really would like. I can actually live without it. I don't have to express my feelings about such and such. I can restrain and not get upset. It's liberating. And this is what helps us with the relinquishment of suffering. Because this is exactly what it is. This is the renunciation, the constant relinquishment of the clinging to our thoughts, our feelings, our being a me, you know, my thoughts, my life. To see it. What am I doing? Just relinquish the grip. Our judgments of ourselves, I'm the worst person in the world, I'm the best person, you know. Just let it all come and go. Our absurd ideas, little humor doesn't hurt. Because we all have absurd ideas. We all have ridiculous thoughts and fantasies and feelings and fears and stories that we tell ourselves and all our stuff that comes from the past. It doesn't just disappear, but we don't have to cling to it. We can let it be. And this is the relinquishment. This is the renunciation. And it's constant. As I said, we do it right from the start. And we do it all the time. No matter how far we've gone in our training, it's something we do constantly, continually. That's very, very simple practice of just letting go. Seeing it, letting it go. Letting everything come in and go out. Rejecting nothing, accepting everything, not clinging on. This is what the Buddha taught us. It's for all of us. It's for us now. It's for us through our whole life. This is the very sustenance that feeds us, the medicine of the Dharma that helps us in every situation of our lives. And this is what the Buddha taught us. This is what he showed us. We don't have to relinquish our whole family and go out with nothing. We can do it moment by moment. This is the true renunciation. Doing this moment by moment. Every day, relinquishing that grip. It's liberation. And that's our talk for the day.